Hello and welcome back to another quiet episode of the First Time Watchers podcast.
Because we like to watch.
My name is Tim Costa.
I'm Hermano De Silva.
Holy crap, he's back!
I'm back.
And this is Walter Vinci.
What we like to do on the FTW podcast is find a movie that none of us have seen, watch it together, and then discuss. These movies could be new, they could be old, or something that is on all of our lists of shame. And if you would like to send feedback, remember to email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com, and stay tuned to the end of this episode for other ways to contact us and to find out what we'll be discussing next week. Speaking of feedback...
Let's hear some feedback.
We would like to thank someone who retweeted a tweet of ours from about 6 months ago.
Jeez, what was the tweet?
Samantha WPG, at Samantha WPG, found our post of when we linked to none other than our Blubberella episode.
This movie has got so much legs on this podcast.
So, I had to ask how she found this tweet from so long ago. And her response was looking in searches for hashtag Blubberella, you pop up. Wanted to see how many other people saw this film. And I just shook my head. I'm like...
And did we get another listener out of it? That's the important...
I don't know. I did respond by saying, give it a listen and tell us what you think. So, hopefully... it's really amazing. This is becoming one of our infamous episodes. We'll probably will never be able to get away from
it. It's the movie with the most legs on this show so far. Blubberella has been mentioned in more podcasts on this show than any other film we've seen so far.
Much to Hermano's chagrin.
this movie will not go away.
It's hilarious. In this episode, we'll be discussing the 2003 Nicholas Winding Refn film, Fear X. But before we get into that, it is time for Yay or Nay. Yay! This is the part of the show where we discuss what we have seen recently on our own. I will go first. First, I'll talk about a movie came out earlier this year by Danny Boyle, Trance. So the plot is an art auctioneer who has become mixed up with a group of criminals partners up with a hypnotherapist in order to recover a lost painting.
That's the one with what's his bucket? The kid from Wanted.
James McAvoy?
That him, yeah.
Yeah. New Professor X? Professor X?
Oh my, you know, I haven't seen him space long enough. That's why his name keeps slipping my mind.
And a very revealed Rosario Dawson. She shows it all. She shows it all. And
you
I mean
you
all.
Say that like that's a problem.
No, it's not. It's not a problem at all. But it's just...
You say that like I haven't seen all that before.
A bit shocking. And Vincent Cassell as well, who plays the bad guy in this. Well, there's a lot of bad guys. It's not really any likable characters. This is a real strange movie. It's pretty trippy. It's a lot of deception going on. For the viewer, you don't really know who's telling the truth, what is really going on, if what you're watching is true. I mean, by the end, I don't think it really wraps up in a convincing way. Based on what they set up. What is ultimately revealed at the end, I think, is pretty predictable, but how they get there... You know, I always talk about execution on the show, and the execution in this really isn't that good. It's funny, too, because, this is like a remake of a early 2000s British film, I think. I remember looking into this, and I think one of the writers wrote the original, and... and also one of the writers has worked on other projects with Danny Boyle as well, so it was real odd to see. You would think that they would be able to develop something that would have resulted in a pretty good project, having all that chemistry, but I would have to blame the writing on this. The direction really isn't that bad. You know, you get typical Danny Boyle flares and flourishes and stuff like that, but I think I would still recommend both of you watch it. Just Well, actually, Wally isn't as big a Danny Boyle fan as Hermano is.
Yeah, I'll give it a shot. I saw the trailer for it on a DVD recently.
I would definitely recommend Hermano see it, because I know you're a pretty big fan of his, and you'd probably want to be a completist on his work. So I'd have to give it a meh overall. Next, TV series from Across the Pond as well, starring Idris Elba, who I always call the next James Bond.
Luther, sir!
Yes, Luther. Season 3 just commenced over here in the States, and it was really interesting. It aired on BBC America.
All right.
And there were only 4 episodes this season, and they aired them in consecutive nights. 4 consecutive nights.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I caught them all on demand a few days later. And, you know, as with the previous two seasons, they obviously cover a lot of ground in such a short amount of time. And in this season, they cover like two cases over the four, two major cases over the four episodes, you know, broken up into two halves. And by the end, there's an event that happens that people have seen this will know what I'm talking about, that is rather shocking and really adds to the mythos of the show, if you will. And they even brought back a character from the first season. So, you know, it's one of the good things about this new age of television is the continuity and how it's a continuing story, and it's not really like an enemy or an event of the week, you know?
Yeah.
As previous TV was.
I'd say TV now is becoming more and more cinematic.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And its story scope and its long arcs.
Yeah.
You get only little snippets at a time.
Yeah. And I think that there's talk of a Luther movie that's going to be adapted, which is really cool. Because I really like Idris Elba. I have, like, a man crush on this guy.
Yes, you do.
You seen any of the
shows? I've only seen little bits of the first season. I need to sit down and actually. I want to watch the entire progression.
Oh, I totally recommend it.
What I've seen, I've absolutely thought was awesome.
It's filmed very well. It's you know, the acting and the storylines are all top notch, and it's not a lot of time invested. Hermano, who doesn't watch TV except for Game of Thrones and
Walking Dead
and Sons of Anarchy.
Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah, but this is really good television. This is I totally recommend. It's not a lot of time to invest. I totally recommend it. So that's a yay for Luther. Finally, a movie that just came out by James Wan, Insidious Chapter 2. Now, as you guys know, and people who have listened, these are the type of movies that terrify me. However, let me just step back, and I have to talk about my theater experience with this one.
Okay.
So, I saw this on a Saturday night at 7:30.
Okay.
And in a 400-seat theater, probably about 400 seats, I'd say about 389 of them were teenagers.
Oh, Jesus.
Holy Jesus Christ.
This is why I hate PG-13 horror movies.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, too. It wasn't until I got to the ticket counter, and I was like, I'm looking around me at the lobby.
And
like,
it hits you.
I'm like, oh, wait a minute. This is PG-13, isn't it? Ah, oh, shit. So, but, you know, and I, as always, I get to the theater, you know, well beforehand, you know, and we're there maybe 20 to 30 minutes beforehand, and we go to sit down, and it's already, like, two-thirds full. And I'm like, holy Jesus. So we get a good seat in towards the front in an area that I always like to sit at. But just watching as the time unfolds closer and closer, just the amount of teenagers, I mean, from 13 to 17-year-olds just piling in.
Yep.
And the noise.
Yep.
And I'm like, this is a point where, you know, you're helpless because you can't do anything about it. If it's only a few kids in front of you during a screening and you're able to quiet them down, then fine. You know, but it's pointless to try to do anything about the kids around you. At one point during the movie, about halfway through, kid in front of me takes a picture with his cell phone with a flash. Next, you just need to look at Hermano's face.
Oh my God, dude.
The kids next to my wife were just talking, you know, in normal voices, you know. I don't know why we went to see it. It was really the only time I think we had to see a show. I mean, this is why I love to go to the earliest screening possible. Whenever I see a 10:30 a.m. showing, I'm in heaven. I am in heaven. Anyways, despite that, I was still able to enjoy the movie because I did enjoy the first one. However, I, you know, as always with those types of movies, I'm terrified. At one point during this movie, my wife looks over at me and sees me. I'm looking down, and she says, "You know, the screen's up there, right?" I'm like, "Shut up." So, I mean, I think it's just as terrifying as the first one, and it's only got a 39 Metascore and about 38% of Rotten Tomatoes. I think the critics are really unfairly harsh on this movie. Because I think it's a good expansion of the mythology of the setup in the first one, and you would think that I think it could become very easy to make it a little bit cheesy or not really as believable, but it certainly it certainly is believable based on what happens. And I, you know, there's returning characters from the first one, which is really cool. There's a lot of levity throughout the movie, which is placed in good points and not overdone. I think it's a well-made movie. Of course, you know, with The Conjuring, one of the biggest praises I had for that movie was how well-crafted it was. And, you know, James Wan once again proves how to optimize the jump scare. He really knows where to place the camera and where to place the actual scare, which is what you go into one of these movies for, you know. And I mean, I would definitely recommend it. I think Hermano is pretty anxious to see it, right?
I wouldn't say anxious. No? I mean, I will check it out at some point, but I didn't want to rush out to watch this. I didn't think the trailer really sold me on it.
So I would give it a yay. And finally, I will talk about another movie from this year. That was actually recommended by one of our new contributors, Simon Opitz, who his very first written review for us was for The Spectacular Now.
Yep.
And he had nothing but glowing things to say about it. And I can see why. One of his last sentences in his review was that it is the best high school movie he's ever seen. Now, I think you can define high school movie in a variety of different ways. You know, it depends on your look. I mean, there's tons of, like, American Pie type movies. Okay. or She's All That type movies, or 10 Things I Hate About You. Those are, I think, what come to mind when you really think about high school movies. This one isn't so much in those realms, because in those movies that I mentioned, it really focuses on a lot of people, a group of people going throughout, you know, high school and experiencing it together or in their own separate ways. This one, it really focuses on two people. The actors, Miles Teller, who's been in Rabbit Hole, that was his first breakout role, and Shailene Woodley, who her breakout role was in The Descendants, and she did a great job in The Descendants, and she does a fantastic job in this as well. This movie is spectacularly acted. I think that the direction and the camera work leaves a lot wanting. The camera work is very uninspired for such a story that could be very inspirational. The plot is a hard-partying high school senior's philosophy on life changes when he meets the not-so-typical quote-unquote nice girl. I mean, it doesn't sound like a very appealing synopsis, but it really focuses on Miles Teller's character, Sutter, and his alcoholism. And it's not an in-your-face thing at all. It's not something that's presented in a way that is over the top. It's very subtle, because it's something that you really gather as the movie goes along, is you really see he always has a drink in his hand, whether it's like a Slurpee or a drink from like a 7-Eleven that probably he dumped alcohol from his flask that he always has on. And as he develops his relationship with Shailene Woodley, he actually gives her a flask as well. And you can see her getting roped into his way of life. And she's just, like, he's a pretty popular kid in school. But she is one that, you know, he would have never, until they, in circumstances where they meet, would have never come across throughout their days in high school. And as they develop their relationship, it's a very believable, very genuine thing that develops. Jennifer Jason Leigh is in this movie. I did not recognize her until about two-thirds of the movie. I'm like, holy shit, she got old. And Kyle Chandler is in this as well. He plays Sutter's dad, and I totally didn't recognize him as well. He does a great job as playing kind of a deadbeat dad. Like I said, the performances are all great. The story is very nice. It's very well told. It probably will at this point in the year may, you know, crack my top 10 of the year so far. It's just that I really felt that I wish it was another cinematographer. If this was like an Alexander Payne type of movie. I mentioned The Descendants earlier that Shailene Woodley was in. His use of the camera and whatever cinematographer he's collaborated with before, I think would have done a great job with this movie. But it didn't stop me from enjoying the movie and really appreciating it. And so I would give it a yay. Wally?
I've only seen one movie, and that movie was introducing one of our listeners to a director they'd never heard before. They'd never heard of John Woo. They'd never seen anything by him. So what better way to introduce this person to John Woo than with Hard Boiled? this movie is pretty much a classic John Woo movie. There is gunplay pretty much every half hour or so that lasts for 15 minutes.
Is this the one with the hospital and the baby at the end?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, I've seen this one.
This movie just I adore John Woo. He's one of my favorite action action directors ever.
Chow Yun Fat.
Chow Yun Fat is one of my favorite actors of all time.
In his prime.
In his prime, he's young. He's carrying shotguns, double guns. He is just like such a badass in this movie. It's not even funny. The viewer's reaction was only so many people are getting shot. And there's a part where they're running down the stairs and the guy's like, move out of the way! and the only like thing that I really can say is like an actual knock on this movie is the sound of the gunshots. They sound like firecrackers. You know, obviously they don't have quite the same production studios in Hong Kong as they do here. So, you know, they have what passes for, you know, gunshots there. And this thing, it sounds like a bunch of firecrackers going off, but it's just all this, everything is getting shot. There's people just running around and, like, will take, like, three bullets only to get back up after, like, being shot in the knees and the chest and, like, you know, bleeding, holding onto their, like, their side. I'm like, you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. So, obviously, John Woo was a very special place in my heart. I'm actually actively working to collect all of his filmography. A lot of stuff was only released in Hong Kong, like, about, like, you know, soldiers and stuff like that that can be kind of hard to get, but if you like action and you want like a really just fun, just over the top time, Hard Boiled is a yay.
Hermano?
All right, got three movies. I'll start with the first one I watched at TIFF.
And wait a minute before you get into that. What about TIFF?
What about it?
Well,
who is TIFF?
Talk about your experience there.
Okay, so I was in Canada this past week. Technically the second week TIFF was going on. It started on the 3rd. I arrived in Canada on the 8th. So it had been on for about 5 days. And I genuinely enjoyed the experience. If I had to do it over again, I think I would have done it a little differently. I didn't go there really knowing the whole process, how everything worked. I didn't know that all these movies were screened in various theaters around Toronto. I thought it was like one giant location or something.
I had no idea.
Festival. Like I didn't realize that I'd be watching one movie and then if I wanted to see another movie, I'd have to travel like a mile or so.
Hop on the bus and go.
And go to another movie, you know what I mean? Like, so that was different. So now knowing that, going back, if I were to go next year or something, I would have probably an easier time just getting from movie to movie. I would definitely buy a package like of like 10 to 20 tickets or something like that if I had the time to see that many movies, because it's so much easier than the process that I had to go through, which was pretty much I didn't have a lot of free time because, I mean, I wasn't there specifically for the film festival. I was there to kind of on a family vacation, visiting family and stuff like that. And I scheduled the vacation alongside of TIFF, you know, if I should happen to have some free time, I could go check out a movie or two. Which is kind of how I did it. And I'd go online when I had free time and I'd say, all right, let's see what movies are playing. And then sometimes movies would have tickets still available. Sometimes they wouldn't. So I missed a few movies because, you know, like popular movies that, you know, they were sold out way in advance. Like you just had to be on the ball and get them way in advance. I did happen to stand in line for one movie in the Rush Line. Are you guys familiar with what the Rush Line is?
No.
If tickets are sold out for a screening, you still have one last chance to get into it. It's called the rush line. So you show up like, say your movie's playing at noon. Show up early. Show up like at 10:30. And there'll be people out there, like volunteers, that'll kind of tell you, all right, what movie are you here for? And I'm like, well, I'm here for this movie. They're like, all right, well, hop in the rush line. And if, for whatever reason, because people during this festival will see like 20, 30 movies. Sometimes they might have a ticket for the movie that you want to see, but they might not go to it because they might be burnt out. So there might be seats available. So they'll kind of look like a half an hour before and see who's in the theater and how many seats are free. So then they'll come back out to the people in the rush line and be like, all right, who's here to see this? And, you know, if you're there to see that specific movie, they'll be like, all right, we got about like 10, 15 seats free. So 10, 15 people in the rush line can get in, the first 10, 15. That's why you want to get there early. So I had to go into the rush line for one movie that I wanted to see that was sold out online. And I wanted to get the full experience. I'm like, well, let me go into the rush line. Who knows? I might get in. I show up, and I show up pretty early, like an hour and a half early, or a little under an hour and a half early. And I'm like, I asked one of the girls, I'm like, oh, I'm here for this movie. Do you know if I'm too early? I don't know the whole process, really. And she's like, well, you could just stand in the rush line, and then someone will come be with you. And I'm like, okay, so where's the rush line? And she's like, oh, it's right there. And I look, and there's just this sign that says rush line, but there's nobody in line. And I'm like, oh, there's nobody in line. She's like, yep, you're first. And I'm like, yeah, that's a good chance that I'm going to get like a ticket for the movie I wanted to see. So I'm like, I wait in line. By the time I actually got into the movie, there was only like five or six people behind me. And only two others were there to see the movie that I wanted to see.
Weird.
So that was not indicative of what the rush line is like, though, because the night, two nights prior to that, I saw what a real rush line looks like, and there was like almost 200 people in it.
Jesus.
And some of those people had been there for like 4 or 5 hours in advance to potentially get into a movie. So I was kind of dreading going into the rush line, but I said, you know what, I'll take a shot, who knows. I got lucky because the movie I wanted to see was in the afternoon. A lot of people were working or school, whatever.
Was this at the Lightbox?
Yes.
What'd you think?
Lightbox was cool. The theater, I didn't know. How big would you say the theater you were in was?
Only a couple, maybe like 200 seats, maybe at most.
The theater I was in was small. Very small.
Yeah.
It was like maybe tops 100 seats.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, and this was for a smaller movie or a lesser-known movie, so I thought, well, maybe they put the smaller movies in these theaters, because this place is huge. It's like a whole city block, pretty much. It's a gigantic building, and I couldn't believe, like, I was kind of like, aw, when I walked into the theater, it was so tiny. It was like the size of my apartment, pretty much, and I'm like, oh, this is kind of small, like, what the hell? I was expecting, like, some gigantic, massive, like, sprawling theater.
Metroplex.
Where I needed, like, old-school, like, binoculars or something to, like, see the screen. some opera glasses or something. It wasn't like that, though. So, that was pretty much my experience. I mean, I went for one of the movies late at night. That was a little better. What surprised me quite a bit was I also didn't realize that, I think for most movies, and even... not just directors, but actors are there for Q&As or to present the movie.
Right.
And I had, like, for both of them, for the screenings that I went to, Ty West was there for the one movie that I saw with him, and then the director for another movie I watched was there as well. So that was cool. That was unexpected. That was, like, a huge shock to me. I was like, oh my God, like, I can't believe he's here. Like, that was, like, such a surprise. Like, I didn't realize... You know, they show up for these things. I thought, you know, they just get their films in. They're too big to show up, you know, for this stuff. But they were there. So that was a nice surprise. Other than that, I mean, I don't have much else to say. I mean, the whole process was kind of a little daunting. I mean, to get tickets, I mean, the way I did it, which is very last minute and stuff like that. Like, I probably wouldn't do it that way again. I would definitely get a package deal and just lay out the movies that I wanted to see and hope that I get into those movies. You know what I mean? So... Overall, though, I had a good time. I mean, it was a good experience, you know, to just kind of see, like, just how busy and how frantic everything was and how many people were there and stuff like that. And these theaters were really nice. I mean, the Bell Lightbox was really good. And then the other movie that I saw was at the Scotiabank Theater.
Yep.
That theater is huge, too. Like, in the lobby, they have probably, like, a minivan-sized USS Enterprise and... Klingon ship or whatever it's called.
The Warbird.
Warbird, yeah. They have like, it's probably the size of a minivan, like hanging from the ceiling. I was like, oh, what the hell? So, yeah, now on to...
So what'd you see?
I swear to God.
The first movie I saw was The Sacrament, Ty West's new movie. The synopsis, I'm glad IMDb updated their synopsis, because the synopsis they had up before was a huge spoiler. Like, I couldn't believe this was the synopsis they had up. The one they currently have up is, two journalists set out to document their friend's search to find his missing sister. That's very vague. Basically...
Joe Swanberg is the cast member in this?
Yes, and if you've seen Your Next, both the main guys in Your Next are in this. Or two of the main guys in Your Next are in
now,
this.
Now, Joe Swanberg is a director, isn't he?
Yeah, he did. He did one of the segments.
Oh, for, Drinking Buddies, and he was in VHS.
Yeah, he did. He was in one of the segments for VHS, and I think he was in. He was in Ty West's segment for VHS. He's the guy that gets his throat slit on the vacation. That's him.
Okay.
Basically, there's this guy who gets a letter from his sister one day. Who his sister's had trouble. She's had drug issues. And she sends him a letter saying that she's met up with these people in one of her drug rehabs through a church. And they seem like really nice, and she's kind of joined their little community. And he's like, oh, that's fine and well. But then the next letter he gets from her is that they're moving the community out of the country, and that she'd like him to visit. So he goes to this these two buddies I have, or this documentary crew, basically, to come with him and tells them their story, pretty much, or tells them his story. And they're interested in the story. They want to know what everything's, you know, what's going on with this commune and stuff. So they tag along and go check it out. It's very typical of a Ty West movie.
I was just about to ask you that.
It's a very slow burn. Like, everything in the beginning is very slow. But once things get going, I really, really like this movie. If you guys... I was not familiar.
How long is it?
It's like an hour and a half. It's not very long. Are you guys familiar with the Jonestown Massacre?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Going into it, I had heard about the Jonestown Massacre. I'd heard that those two words put together. I just didn't know exactly all the details. So this movie felt very fresh to me. Afterwards, I read about the Jonestown Massacre.
Is this a spoiler?
No, I don't think so.
Oh,
okay. No, because, I mean, the way he's describing, the minute he said they're moving up the group out of the country, I'm like, oh, I know where this is going already.
Yeah. Basically, if you know... Actually, maybe it is potentially a spoiler. If you are aware of what the Jonestown Massacre is, then this movie's going to seem very familiar to you. Like, I think it's kind of a loose, semi-loose retelling from what I read afterwards. It's not completely accurate, but there's one standout performance in this movie, the character called Father. He's played by the actor that played the gas station owner in No Country for Old Men.
His name is Gene Jones. Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Jesus, his name is Gene Jones.
His performance in this movie, dude... if this movie was any bigger, like, I swear he'd be nominated for an Oscar. It was fantastic. I thought it was so good. Like, he steals, like, the movie. Like, he is so far and above everyone else in the movie. Because the other two guys aren't technically, you know, they're actors, but they're not, like, you know, like, to the level of, like, a Brad Pitt or something like that. You know what I mean? They're just kind of there. But this guy, holy shit. Like, he was so effing good and so believable in his role. And... the movie is really, really hard to watch towards the end. Like, I had a kind of a hard time watching it. I mean, it's not a typical horror story. I mean, a horror movie. It has horror elements. Like, really horrific stuff happens in the movie. But I don't know that I would call it a horror movie, though. I think that's pretty much the only genre you can actually place it in. But I would definitely say yay on the movie. I think, honestly, it's one of Ty West's best movies.
Hmm.
Especially the performance he got out of that dude. Cause
would you say it's in your top 10 of the year so far?
Considering how bad this year has been, yeah, it's definitely my top 10. So that's a yay for that one. Now, this is the movie I stood in the rush line for. There were two movies I could have seen. It was this one, and I can't even remember the other one, because the other one was another foreign movie, but it seemed like more of a drama, so I was not really in the mood for a drama. I was like, eh.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I just wanted to mention that we had posted four pics on Twitter of the thing with Ty West.
Yeah, he did the
Q&A with Ty West after the movie.
Yes, I did shoot some footage of him fielding some questions. I'll put that up. I was going to wait till this episode came out and then I was going to put it up. But I got some pictures of him just answering questions. He was there with two producer guys and they just kind of answered just brief questions about the location and how they built the sets and just kind of the whole process of making the movie.
Now, was this your first experience with a Q&A type format? Of any sort? Of
yeah,
any
for screen? The most part. I mean, I know Kevin Smith does stuff that Wally's attended. Yeah. I've never been to anything like that, really.
What did you think? How did it go?
It was good. I mean, the moderator was really good. He kind of only asked two questions himself that Ty West answered. And then he pretty much put it out to the audience, and I think maybe five questions were asked, and then that was all that time we had. Because the movie was at 9:45. It's an hour and a half long. It's kind of late at night. I think they had another movie playing right after it from Midnight Madness or whatever. So I think they, you know, it had to be semi-brief. So it was only like maybe half an hour or something like that. It wasn't too long. So, okay. Yeah, it was a good experience. I mean, he was really cool. He answered all the questions. He was funny, you know. So,
On to your second film.
Like I was saying, I had the option between two movies. One was a drama, foreign movie. Wasn't really in the mood for it. And then there was this movie. It's called Rigor Mortis. It's also a foreign movie. And it's from Hong Kong. First time director. I guess this guy, his name is, I think it's Juno Mak. I think in Hong Kong, he's actually known as like a singer / actor. So this is his first movie he's ever taken on to direct. And there's a little bit of background to this movie. I guess in the 80s, there was a small genre of movie called the jumping vampire movie. And there hadn't been one, I guess, in like 30 years. So this guy kind of...
This was a genre?
It was kind of like sort of like a mini subgenre of like a horror movie. There was like this type of movie where they were like... It wasn't like typical vampires. It was like a jumping vampire.
Can you give an example of one? A movie?
I've never seen one where there had been a jumping vampire. I've never seen the original. Like the girl in line actually asked me if I'd ever seen any of the other jumping vampire movies. And I'm like, no. I mean, other than the little research I did before this movie, I'd never even heard of it. I mean, it was probably a little before my time because I think she said the first one came out in 83. I would have only been like 7 years old. I was a little before my time. So actually, I would have been 6 years old. So I wasn't really familiar with it. And I guess the director set out to kind of make an homage in a sense. Now, I didn't really get that after I'd watched the movie because there is a jumping vampire in it, but I would never call this a vampire movie. It's more of a supernatural movie.
It's the oddest subgenre I've ever heard. Jumping vampire.
Yeah, I don't know how else to classify. That's pretty much the way it was described to me. But basically, the synopsis is a public housing tenement is plunged into a dark storm of supernatural chaos. Another very vague plot synopsis. Basically, the movie starts out with this guy moving back into this giant public housing tenement. And he's greeted by a security guard, and the security guard recognizes him as someone that used to live in the tenement. But he's also someone that is a movie star. And the guy's like, well, usually once people move out, you don't ever have them moving back in, like, especially someone of your stature, like you're a movie star, like that's, you know, but he doesn't want to be pry or be nosy. He's just like, it just introduces the guy as a movie star. He's carrying these costumes behind him, and they're like costumes he would wear in various movies. And I don't know how much is a spoiler. I think this happens very beginning of the movie. He tries to commit suicide, the movie star, and he's rescued by this guy who cuts him down from a ceiling fan, and the movie goes from there. And everything kind of seems very supernatural, and it's never explained why. This movie, by the way, I watched the trailer for it before going into it, and it reminded me of a Tarzan movie where there was a lot of like slow moving, beautiful choreographed shots, just fantastic visuals.
Tarzan
like,
of the fall and the cell.
Fall and the cell, huh. Yeah, like a lot of stuff that just really rung. Of stuff that I've seen in his movies, and that's what really kind of attracted me to it, and just kind of the tone of the movie just kind of seemed like right up my alley. Like I kind of like these kind of weird, like supernatural kind of on. It's kind of a horror movie as well. Basically, like kind of shit hits the fan. I don't know how much I can really say about the plot. It'd be really hard to describe it to you guys because it kind of goes all over the place. The only knock I would give to the movie is that it's one of those movies at the end, there's like this little button to the end of the movie that I think the movie tries to be a little too smart for its own good. Like it tries to kind of make you rethink about everything you've just seen and maybe look at it in a different way, a la Life of Pi. but not as, you know, poetic and, you know, like as Life of Pi was.
You seriously just compare this movie to Life of Pi?
No, Mia kind of put it in a good comparison. She's like, they try to do something similar to Life of Pi, where they try to make you reevaluate everything you just see, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, that kind of makes sense now, or that kind of explains why everything is so supernatural and all these weird things are happening. And, you know, you kind of meet all these you know, in any, like, you know, movie where it takes place in a tenement, you meet all these people that live in the housing complex, and they all seem to have, like, this weird little quirk to them and stuff like that, and it tries to explain all of that stuff.
Sounds like The Lady in the Water.
It sort of resembles it a little bit. I dug it. I mean, I don't think it's... I didn't like it as much as The Sacrament, but I thought it was a really good first effort. I just think that, like most movies, I think there's something lost in translation where, like scenes don't really connect very well. It feels like things were cut out, and they just kind of don't really go into the details. They just kind of skip things.
I find that to be typical of a number of Asian movies.
Of, like, foreign movies.
You know, I find the best... Asian country to do that, to do it well, to, you know, with the editing and all that, is Korean films.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always find, you know, some Japanese, and especially, you know, Hong Kong or Chinese films to be...
Cut corners a little bit, and just kind of do a little bit of strange editing where they don't really connect scenes very well, but overall, I enjoyed it. I mean, it's definitely more of a visual movie. The story is a little muddled. I mean... As a genre movie, like, as, like, kind of, like, a horror supernatural movie, I think it would, like, hit that nerve for people that love movies of those type. So I'm definitely going to say yay on it. And then finally...
Really?
Excuse me. I watched a movie that stars two of the biggest actors in Hollywood today.
I swear to God.
Takes place in a very dark place. Where no one can hear you scream.
I'm gonna punch you in the face.
And of course, I'm talking about 1999 Sleepy Hollow.
Okay.
Don't worry, Tim. I didn't see Gravity. I tried to, but when I saw the rush line for it, I was like, "Hell's no!" There was like seriously like 200 people in line.
Jesus.
In 91, there was like that's the other thing I should have told you. The first day I went to go to TIFF. They had a heat wave in Toronto, 91 degrees, 2 days in a row. In the middle of the city, it felt like 110. It was so effing hot. These people were waiting in the line. God bless them, because there was like a couple hundred people, crowds everywhere, surrounded by tall buildings. Like, it was just really freaking ridiculous. And I'm like, there's no fucking chance in hell I'm getting into this movie, because probably more than half of these people are here to try to get into Gravity, which maybe like five of them might get in if they're lucky. So I was like, no, I'm not even going to try.
Did you even attempt for 12 Years a Slave?
No, that's the other thing. 12 Years a Slave actually had its premiere the day before I got there. And then the only other showing was the day after I left. So it was on consecutive Saturdays, so I had no chance of seeing 12 Years a Slave. So
what do you think the logic is with that, to only have two showings?
It's probably more scheduling than anything else.
Probably scheduled for maybe like to have like... Brad Pitt and Benedict Cumberbatch show up. Maybe they can only show up on those days. Like, maybe they only
have... Do they need to have a star show up in every single showing?
To make it, like, a big... I mean, it's one of the... It was the movie. It won the festival, pretty much. Yeah. It was 12 Years a Slave. So, yeah, they probably wanted to... I mean, these guys are probably working on other movies. They probably want to have them there to make it a big... grander, you know, bigger thing, so...
Did they do the same with Gravity? Only a couple of showings?
Gravity looked like it maybe had... Three or four, wow. I would say. There was like one or two before I got there, and then the one I tried to go to. I don't know if there were any afterwards.
I'm trying not to get caught up in the hyperbole of those two films, you know?
Yeah.
It's pretty tough to avoid.
I figured it wasn't a big deal, because, I mean, Gravity comes out in like, what, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, something like that. So, and then 12 Years a Slave comes out in like a month, so.
Yeah.
I was a little bummed. I kind of wanted to see Gravity, but, you know, I was late. Like I said, I definitely would plan ahead next time, but.
So you actually watched Sleepy Hollow?
So I watched Sleepy Hollow, because this is one of those Mia was in a specific mood to watch a movie. And I'd only ever seen it once, you know, obviously directed by Tim Burton. Synopsis: Ichabod Crane is sent to Sleepy Hollow to investigate the decapitations of three people, with the culprit being the legendary apparition, the Headless Horseman. I'd only ever seen it once. I barely remembered it.
The only part I can remember is those weird glasses that he had, like the telescoping...
Yeah, like when he does his glasses, little...
like his detective kit and whatnot.
Yeah.
But that's all I can remember. I can't remember how the damn thing ends.
I can't remember either. It's been a while since I've seen it, too.
Yeah, I don't even remember it being that old. I was surprised to see that it was from 1999, but one thing I will say is I don't remember it being as good as... Like, watching it this time, I was like, wow, this is a lot better than my initial remembrance of it was, because I was just kind of like, no one ever really talks about this movie, and as far as when they mention, what are your favorite Tim Burton movies? No one ever says Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even see people mention it in their top three. And watching it, I was like, you know what, man? I think this is one of his better movies. Like,
I can see that.
Like, set-wise and just, like, the scope of it and stuff like that, like, it looked fantastic. And it was a lot darker than I remember it being. Like, the decapitations, they're not, like, off-screen. You see people's heads come chopping, you know, being chopped off. And it's a lot bloodier and darker than I remember it being. Like, it's definitely not a tame movie. And I can kind of tell by looking at it here, it's rated R. I didn't realize that watching it, because it doesn't seem like it's a hard R, but there are elements of it that I can see where, you know, there's some nudity, there's decapitations, obviously, like, blood. I mean, I liked it overall. I mean, it's kind of a different I hadn't seen Johnny Depp in a role like this in a long time, because he's usually playing, like, these wacky characters, like Jack Sparrow.
Well, you know, all this praise you're giving to this is probably because this is before the system got a hold of Burton and Depp. You know?
Yeah, potentially, yeah. I mean, it is, like 14 years ago, so...
Yeah.
I enjoyed it, man. I had a good time watching it. I mean, it's been a while since I've seen a movie from Tim Burton that I'm like, I genuinely like this. Like, he's usually putting out shit like Alice in Wonderland now, and what's that one that came out, like, last year? Dark Shadows or whatever?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't even bother watching that because I'd heard it was so bad, and I was like, what happened to this guy? Like, I want this Tim Burton back, pretty much.
Everybody
was watching
does.
This, and I was like, where did this guy go? Like, this is pretty good.
Burton, we like you to be weird and quirky. Can you take this and make it weird and quirky? You know, do what you gotta do. You're the creative here.
I mean, it's got 191,000 reviews on IMDb, and it's got a 7.4 average. That's pretty damn good on IMDb. Pretty good. So, I mean, I gave it a 7. I think it stands up and it holds up. Like, it seems like a movie that could have came out this year. Like, it's the quality is there, so I'm yay on it. And that was it.
Speaking of quality and yay, did you know that we have a YouTube page now?
Eh? What?
Tim, so, I'm a little older than you. What is this YouTube?
Well, if you just type in YOUTUBE.com, it'll bring you right to YouTube. It's amazing. It's wondrous. Because we're on it!
So wait. So if I type that in, I physically leave the place I'm at via teleportation and end up in the internets?
We have a little bit of content on it now, and we will be adding content very soon. We even are going to have a little in-show content from this episode. And I'm sure Wally still has a couple of things to
do. Yeah, something coming this week.
Hermano just
very least.
Mentioned something from TIFF.
I'm going to be putting up some Q&A video that Ty West did after a screening of his movie The Sacrament.
So if you visit youtube.com/1sttimewatchers, you'll be able to see all this content, you know, and maybe some extras that each of us are going to share on our own. Once again, that is youtube.com/1sttimewatchers, just another way to enjoy the show. All right, let's get into trailer hitches. This is the part of the show that gives us an opportunity to mention a trailer that either gets us on board for an upcoming movie or makes us want to bitch. I will go first. I want to talk about a movie that is starring and directing one of my man crushes. I'm sorry, directed by one of my man crushes. Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Ooh.
And that is Don John, coming out in, later this month, actually. The synopsis is a New Jersey guy dedicated to his family, friends, and church develops unrealistic expectations from watching porn and works to find happiness and intimacy with his potential true love, played none other than Scarlett Johansson. And also, Julianne Moore and Tony Danza is in this. Tony Danza plays Joseph Gordon-Levitt's father. And I love the New Jersey affect that Don, you know, he's putting on as Don John. Just this muscle-bound, workout Guido type with the great, great New Jersey accent. Honestly, watching this trailer, I got a mix of two movies. It is really weird. Shame and Pain and Gain.
Wow.
But
so this is going to go across the spectrum, apparently.
I don't know, but it looks like it's, you know, a comedy drama, and that's how it's described on IMDb. You know, I'm a big fan of Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I love just about everything he's been in and every role that he's played recently. I'm really anxious to see, you know, what he's going to do as a director. I mean, based on the trailer, I doubt that he's the one that cut the trailer. But based on what I saw in the trailer, you know, it looks like he's really going full out on this you know muscle-bound Guido type. And you know, there's so many comedic moments. He's addicted to porn. And he repeats what his loves in life are, is family, friends, church, and porn. Family, friends, church, and porn. Family, friends, church, and porn. And, or like girls and porn or whatever. And it shows, you know, him like objectifying women and having all these one-night stands. And then he meets Scarlett Johansson, you know, and it's like, you might as well have that Love at First Sight song come up. And Scarlett Johansson also, you know, has this New Jersey way about her. And it's, everything about it seems, you know, convincing and fun. This movie looks like a lot of fun, and I'm hitching my wagon on this one. I'm really excited. Hermano?
The movie I want to talk about is a movie called The Last Days on Mars. Synopsis is, a group of astronaut explorers succumb one by one to a mysterious and terrifying force while collecting specimens on Mars. Directed by Ruairi Robinson. I just checked to see what, I don't even know if it's a male or female, but I checked what he and she had directed previously. I've not seen any of their movies before. But it stars Liev Schreiber, Elias Koteas, which I love in everything he does, and I don't recognize some of these other characters, Romola Gari and Olivia Williams.
Oh yeah, Olivia Williams, I recognize her.
Basically, from the trailer, it looks like some astronauts are on Mars. They've been collecting specimens, and it's their last day before they return to Earth. And wouldn't you know it, someone's like, you know what? I just want to go out one last time and collect some more specimens. And shit hits the fan. They basically, a character falls into the ground. They discover some alien specimen slash life form or something, and you know, the trailer goes from there. You just kind of see people dealing with, you know, this character that had fallen in being infected or something, and they're dealing with that. And at the end of the trailer, like, you hear like Liev Schreiber say something like, "We can't go back to Earth like this," or something like that, like along those lines. And
I want to tell you what I got a vibe of. This looks like a love letter to James Cameron. I got aliens and I got the abyss,
yeah,
all wrapped up into one.
Yeah. I got a little bit of that vibe too,
but it looks like in a good way to me.
No, I think it looks pretty good. I mean, it's right up my alley. It's a science fiction movie. It's in space. Kind of tickled my alien funny bone a little bit, like Tim just said. I mean, it looks well shot. I mean, it looks like kind of like, you can kind of tell it looks like a smaller budget movie. I kind of got like a little bit of a Moon vibe from it as far as the look. And
the spaceship. I totally got a Nostromo vibe.
Yeah,
from Alien.
And it was kind of tickling my my Event Horizon funny bone too. So, I mean, I'm a huge fan of
Event Horizon. Funny bone, because you laughed all throughout Event Horizon.
It was laugh riot.
Tons of fun.
Anyways, I think the movie looks pretty good. I mean, as far as sci-fi movies go, I can't think of a really good sci-fi movie I've seen since like Prometheus.
I have a feeling that'll change soon.
Yeah. So, Hitchin,
Walter.
All right, this movie. Jesus, I'm so bereft of trying to find good things to watch in 2013. Seems that the nuggets are coming few and far between. But if you've ever wondered what would happen if Raging Bull decided to fight Rocky, you would get Grudge Match, apparently.
Apparently.
But now, as opposed to when they were in their prime.
Yeah.
Starring Robert De Niro, Sylvester Stallone, both playing boxers who were, you know, the top of the game, only had, you know, two fights over their entire career, and then, you know, retire.
Holy Jesus, that was Kim Basinger?
Yep.
Holy Jesus, I didn't even recognize her.
So, 30 years later, they're making a video game. It looks like they're making a video game based off of these two guys. And Kevin Hart, it plays the best friend of Sylvester Stallone. And, you know, gets him like, well, just come on down. They'll pay you, throw a couple punches. You know, they'll motion capture you, and then that's it. You get paid, you go home. Well, during, like, the motion capture thing, De Niro shows up in an actual old man fist fight while they're wearing motion capture suits, ends up breaking out, which leads them to like a one last like bout at their age right now. So I don't really know what to make of this. Really, the only thing that's actually got me even remotely in this is Alan Arkin being Stallone's trainer.
He looks like every other stick Alan Arkin or Alan Arkin type person into this role.
Yeah, but see,
he just plays like another angry old man, or
but that's what
curmudgeonly old man.
That's what I like about Alan Arkin. He and I have a lot in common.
You're a curmudgeonly old man.
Not yet. I'm a curmudgeonly young man.
Didn't we already have this in Rocky Balboa? We had this already.
It seems very similar to the setup, like to get someone Sloan to come back out of retirement. Like,
but so this is like, this is gonna be a Christmas movie. It's gonna be one of those.
You already have too many Christmas movies to
fairly,
watch.
Fairly lighthearted, you know, Christmas. This looks better than The Family, that's for damn sure. Well, yeah. I'd rather go see this than that piece of shit.
Yeah, and there's a reason The Family came out this past weekend.
Yeah, so.
It's not going to make any money.
Not with Walter Mitty.
Monuments Men.
Yeah, and all the other movies that come out around Christmas. But I can't say I'm actually hitching to this.
Thank you.
It's a trailer that just happened to cross my field of vision, which that's the only thing, first thing I thought was like, oh, what, Raging Bull and Rocky. Yeah, all right. I wish this would have happened, I don't know, a while back. That would have been nice. But yeah, I can't say I'm actually hitching to this. This is another one of those. 2013, I'm going to call it the WHY year.
Guess what, Hermano?
What, sir?
We have merchandise available for purchase now.
The hell you say?
That's not Hermano. Yes, you can get t-shirts and more if you visit Zazzle.com/first-time-watchers. I think in the future you'll be able to purchase just about anything with our logo on it.
Anything that Zazzle sells.
All right.
Eye patches?
No, they don't sell eye patches. They also don't sell thongs either, I checked.
Fedoras?
That would be awesome. I would so wear a first-time watchers fedora.
So please show your support for the show by visiting Zazzle.com/first-time-watchers and find an item, most likely a t-shirt, not a fedora, that you would be proud to wear. Once again, that's Zazzle.com/first-time-watchers. Okay, let's get into our discussion of Fear X.
You and your wife ever been political activists? You know, environment, Buddhists, save the whales, members of a cult, anything like that?
Well, I was thinking of maybe moving from here. I was wondering about the place right across from me.
I'm afraid that one's rented.
Really?
The plot. When his wife is killed in a seemingly random incident, Harry, prompted by mysterious visions, journeys to discover the true circumstances surrounding her murder. The director, Nicholas Winding Refn. The actors, John Turturro, Deborah Kara Unger, and Stephen Eric McIntyre. Hermano.
Yes, sir.
Impressions?
Okay. So, is this his first feature film? No?
No, this is the film that actually bankrupted him.
Yes. Oh, bankrupted the studio, the company.
His Django studio.
I read that. This is not his earliest film. It's one of his earlier films, though.
I don't know. I'm looking it up right now.
I kind of wish I hadn't seen this film. In a way, because I don't think it's bad. I think there are parts in it that are bad that really stink of, like, the time it came out, I think.
Pusher came out in 96, and then his next film was Bleeder, 99, and then Fear X.
Yeah, okay, so the Pusher trilogy was his first film.
The first of the first.
Okay, and then this. I don't know what happened. Like, I think there's a good story here, and if you look at the movie in a certain way, like, I'm interested in spoilers to hear what you guys took away from the movie. I thought mostly it was good, but then it would insert those weird interstitials where, like, there would be, like, the screen would just go red, and there'd be this weird element that just seemed like it really stuck out compared to the rest of the movie.
Well, yeah, that is obviously something in his mind. It's, like, representing maybe his subconscious or something
like
that. That's
the thing I didn't like the physical representation of it. Like, I just thought it was too on the nose, too in your face, too blunt. Other than that really in your face stuff, like, I thought the rest of the movie was really just kind of mellow and just kind of really moved nice and slow, and you really felt like John Turturro did a great job acting as a guy who's lost his wife and is looking for answers. I didn't think you needed that stuff to kind of give you like an inside peek into his mind. You know what I mean? Like, I just didn't think it worked well within the movie, and they did it like three times, and I thought each time it got worse. Like, I was just like, this is just silly. This doesn't really mesh with the rest of the movie, in my eyes at least. And that really took away from the movie for me. I mean, other than that, I really enjoyed all the other stuff, all the supernatural stuff that was going on, as far as him being guided through the movie to like clues as to like to progress, like getting answers to, you know, why his wife was killed.
Is that how you saw it, as it was all supernatural, like the visions of his wife?
Well, gotta wait into spoilers to get what I really thought afterwards, but I kind of like the way the movie ended, how it kind of leaves it open-ended, and I don't know how much more I can say. Like, overall, I enjoyed the movie, but I think it's, like, my least favorite of all of his movies.
Wally?
All right, see, I have a certain crush on Nicholas Winding Refn, because I
because I don't know if you listened to last week's episode, Hermano, but he just recently saw Bronson for the first time.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I watched Bronson after I saw this movie. So, last week I talked about watching Bronson, the week before I had seen this in preparation for the show,
mm-hmm.
and, yeah, you mentioned, like, the red swirly things. Yeah, that was a little weird, because I was, like, when I'm watching on my screen trying to, like, see if there's any pictures, like, in the red stuff, I'm like, is there something in there? I can't really tell. I think it would have been better if they were more, like, those weird hallucinations where he sees her, his wife walking around the house and, like, doing stuff and, like, talking to her. I dug that. I was like, all right, I dig this. But I also see a lot of Refn's signature, no one fucking said, don't say a word. Don't, shut up.
Yeah.
You know, just sit there and just let me work the camera on you. And I love that. I love the scene where he's in the house.
Across the street?
Across the street. And, like,
I have a question about that.
Like, I loved that scene right there. I'm sitting there like, what's going to happen? What's going to fucking happen? And I'm like, and then, you know, things start happening around the house. I'm like, oh, all right, this is pretty cool, but where's this going? Where's this going? And then, of course, stuff that I can't talk about until spoilers. Overall, I really like this movie. Like, I don't know if it's just I'm watching it with a certain set of, I mean, because I've loved everything that he's put out so far. If I'm watching it with a certain set of rose-colored glasses.
Or you're, like, on a Bronson high.
No, I saw Bronson afterwards.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, you saw it afterwards, so maybe it, like, painted.
Reinforced something.
Yeah, reinforced something. Like, oh, wait, well, he did Bronson, maybe.
You know. Yeah, I mean, those also Drive, and, you know, Only God Forgives, which are all high up on my list. I really dug this. I also really like the scene where he's, well, you know, he's a man looking for answers, and he sees just that dude just standing around the mall, and he's kind of getting closer to him, and then you see it cuts to him being called into the supervisor's office, and you're making customers. You can't be making customers uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. This is the third time we've heard about this, like, this month.
Yep.
I dug that, because that shows that he's basically just, like, he's just, everyone's a suspect to him. Like, he's, like, just grasping everywhere that he can.
Well, that slow reveal of the suspect list on his wall, essentially, was really cool. You know, I dug this movie. However, I can see him. I think this is a movie where he's testing out a lot of things. You know, just like you said, Hermano, it's early in his career. It's his third movie, and I think that he's using this as an experiment, essentially, to try out a number of things. And some of it works. Some of it works, especially, you know, the slow zoom ins, the slow pans. You know, he does a great job with the camera of keeping it still and then panning from one side of the room to the other, or then just making a reveal of an area that gives a little bit more insight to what's going on. It's really interesting to see him taking photographs of the screen of the VHS tapes, and then trying to
get somewhere with it.
Get somewhere with it. Yeah, weird. My biggest question with the film is what leads him across the street? Why does he go across the street?
The light in the house.
No, not just that. He has that vision
of his wife going toward the house at the beginning of the movie.
She's leading him in a lot of the scenes.
See, I never gathered that until you just mentioned that it was like a ghostly presence, if you will. I always thought it was just visions, that he was just having visions of his wife, of longing for her. Why is the film strip there in the house? Who was across the house? Like, what happened in that house?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Well, the
that was never explained.
Yeah, it's explained later in the movie why that's in that house, and I'll tell you that during spoilers.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see what your final takeaway from this movie is, because I have a very specific one, and I think it's, I want to see what you.
But overall, I like the mystery. You know, there's a mystery that is being unraveled throughout this film, and it isn't until halfway through that you see the other half of the mystery. You know, it's not a spoiler. You know, there's a police officer that is revealed to be the other half of the story. And you get a little bit of insight as to what happened in the other half of the story. Mm-hmm. And the well, not really a reason, but a reason for the reason, if you will. What happened was, an after effect of what was really he was really doing there. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You could probably draw a lot of your own conclusions, but it doesn't really matter to the end of the story. Because in the end, it's all about John Turturro's character trying to come to a resolution of his wife's murder. So, and it's cool that, you know, it's slowly revealed that he has a friend who is also, you know, who works with him as a security guard who was probably a cop at one point, still has connections in the police force, and that's how he's able to get all these CCTV recordings.
See, I was unclear on that because I feel like that was the mall footage and he was just returning it, because later you see his friend working as a security guard in the control room.
Yeah.
With all the cameras. I think he was just returning the mall's footage because they would have to turn it over to the police.
Yeah, but
he's letting him borrow it.
He eventually got CCTV footage of the area where his wife was murdered, and I don't think that was at the mall.
It's at the mall. It's outside the mall.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was
the
really late.
In the parking garage.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Either way. I mean, it's not nearly as good a film as the other ones that we've seen of his. Not at all. But I think it's still, I think if you're a Reffing fan, as we are, that you'll appreciate this movie on certain levels.
I appreciate it on the level that I saw touches of Nicholas Winding Refn from other movies, like the super saturated reds in the hotel really reminded me of Only God Forgives.
He probably just duplicated that in some scenes in Only God Forgives.
And the, obviously, like Wally was saying, like the characters not having a ton of dialogue and everything, just really uncomfortable, like, silences. Yep. And, like, he does that in a lot of his movies, and just, like, characters just kind of looking at each other, like the scene with him in the hotel room with the girl, like that was tense in a way that was just strange because I didn't know why I felt tense because there was no, I didn't know what was going to happen. It was just kind of like no one was saying anything. It was just two people just kind of looking at each other. And you're just like, what are they doing? What's going to happen here?
Yeah.
And he sets that up with so minimally, like it's weird how he's able to evoke these weird, like, things in me, like, that most other directors don't, you know? Very simplistically, too.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's interesting, because before recording, Mia has said that she was interested in hearing what we had to say, because working at Blockbuster, she said that a lot of people return this movie hating it.
Yes.
Hating it. Now, first off, I'm surprised that this movie would be available at a Blockbuster. Secondly, I can understand why people would hate this.
Blockbuster only went out of business, a couple of years ago.
Well, when she worked there, it was...
Yeah, I can't imagine they had, like, you know, 20 copies of this movie. Like, no, they must have had one, and I'm surprised that she even got more than one opinion on it. Like, it just seems like it would have been a small movie back then. I had never heard of it.
No, me neither. Of course, you know, one thing that we're wanting to do now is go back and into the catalogs of directors that we really appreciate, either all three of us or individually. And this is how, you know, what we're doing, essentially. We're going back into a film that we haven't seen of a director we really, really like. And, you know, like I said before, it's his early work, and you can see him experimenting, you can see him working on things, and you can definitely see influences in his later
movies for sure.
From this movie.
I mean, I definitely get more influence from this movie from movies like Drive and Only God Forgives, much more so than Bronson or the Pusher trilogy. Like, those movies are standalones in his filmography compared to, like, I would put this in the group of, like, Drive and Only God Forgives as far as, like, sort of experimental...
especially with the cameras, the slow dolly in.
And saturation.
That's
color saturation.
That's what I look for in, like, every...
The color palette, especially in...
What was really minimalist was score. You could barely even hear it.
Yeah.
You know? I was really curious to see if maybe, you know, Cliff, it was early Cliff Martinez or anything, but... anything else before spoilers?
No, let's get into spoilers.
What did you want to mention, Wally?
Why is the film strip there?
Yeah.
Because that's where the agents were hiding out for them to make the hit. They rented that house. When he calls up to find out who's living there, they said the place has been paid for an entire year.
Uh-huh.
The FBI is paying for that. Well, that department that those three guys were at,
yeah,
they were living there. That's why that film
strip
is
there. Why were they
there,
though?
To do the hit on the guy that was killed, but his wife was killed in the crossfire of. That's their safe house.
So it just so happened that
it was across the street.
The wife, his wife is in the same area where the person from across the street is in, getting
his wife killed? Was in the wrong place at the wrong time. The hit was supposed to be just on the guy in the parking
lot. That is a strange coincidence, that the person who was intended to be killed was actually living across the street, or on the same street.
She wasn't the target.
No. The person who was, the cops intended to kill.
No, the cops were staying across the street. The person they intended to kill was elsewhere.
Okay, even so, that's a strange coincidence.
Wow, what's coincidence about it? You could be down the street from a safe house, you wouldn't know.
I know, but it's just a weird, weird coincidence to me.
Okay. See, Wally took it in a very literal sense, which is initially how I took it. I'm like, well, that must have been what happened. Like, they must have been there. He happened to drop this film strip. His wife's apparition leads him to this house, and he sets him forth on his little adventure, or his little quest for answers. But then things happen at the end of the movie, and it made me completely look at it a different way, and I feel so strongly about this, that nothing in this movie happened like the way it was depicted. It's all in his head. I mean,
I'm going to disagree with you on that one.
Well, all right, now, seeing visions of your wife, honestly, you're not in your right mind.
I'll give you that.
You're a little bit out there.
Yep.
Taking pictures of completely blurred out guys on screen and putting them pictures all along your wall, you're out there. You're not going to get anything from that. His whole quest, I think, was set up in his mind. Like, his whole, like, my wife's going to lead me to this house, like, and just happens to be a film strip of, like, this guy just happened to have a film strip with him.
And so it's a negative.
Dropped it. It's a negative, well, exactly.
This whole story is in his mind? Is that what you're saying?
I believe so, because by the end of the movie, not to jump way ahead, he's in a hospital bed. He's wrapped up. So apparently he's been shot. You never see anything to depict that he's been shot. In fact, the cops are looking at him like, why are you even here? Like, we didn't find anything. No blood.
Yeah, there was no guns, evidence of a struggle.
Nothing. I think he set up this entire thing in his head, because the whole point of the movie is people are telling him, I know it's really hard, but you should try to move on. I know it's difficult to not have answers and not know why she was killed, but you just got to move on.
So even the story of the cops, you know, when it goes to the point of view of that cop and the story of the corrupt police officers, yeah. Even that's in his head?
I think all of that is in his head. I think he's setting forth a story. This is his way of getting closure, of moving on. He built this entire story in his mind.
So when he finally breaks down in bed, in the hospital bed...
Yeah, he finally blacks out with so much anger at the fact that there's no answer to... Like, I don't even... I mean, everything that brought him to this hotel, like, there's no reason other than he says that me and my wife stayed here once. That's it. That's the only connection he has to that place. It's all these memories of his wife that lead him to these locations. The house across the street, the place where they spent vacation, they ate at this diner once. It's all coincidental. Like, it's all in his head. He just built a story, fabricated a story in order to get closure, to be able to move on. And by the end of the movie, you get a sense that he has moved on, because he just tosses all the evidence, all the pictures.
I can buy that.
He's built.
No, I took a different ending on that.
You took the very literal sense, which up until the end, I had the exact same look at it as you did.
Because you have you see the cop and you see the agents. I'm not sure if they're actually police officers. They're part of some other bureau or something like that, that are doing this hit on this other guy. And the man, the actor who plays the man behind the desk, basically tries to warn this guy off of actually going, you know, why you're doing this. Yeah. You know, just let it go.
Yeah.
And the guy, he can't let it go. I honestly think that everything happened. Like, he was shot, you know.
This is your Life of Pi theory, you know. Yeah,
and is in the elevator. When he goes on the elevator, everything's black. He's blacked out. He's in a rage fury at that point, and he's actually killed him. But these other two guys need that cover up, and that's why they sanitized the whole area.
I looked at it that exact same way.
At that point, when he's throwing the papers, he realizes that, like, his only lead's gone. Like, the last lead that he had. He has no choice at that point but to let it go. You know what I mean? Basically, he's throwing his hands up at this point going, I'm never going to get anywhere with this.
I'm going to rebuke you again. All right. Now, he meets up with the cop, supposedly, that's killed his wife accidentally. He meets up with this like, shady, undercover, like, thing that they're going out being vigilantes pretty much and killing crooked cops.
Yes.
That just seemed way out there to me. Like, that just seemed like it was too far out.
Yeah, crooked cops killing crooked cops.
Yeah, like, it just didn't seem right. And then the only other thing that really made me think that he's inventing this entire story in his head is what fake room does he give the guy that he's staying in?
He gives him the room, he transposes the numbers.
Yeah, he says it in reverse, 503.
Yeah.
What room is the cop in when he goes to meet him?
503.
I just think that was too coincidental, too much of a... you know, it just did not add up to me. It just really stunk of somebody that's making up this story as they go.
See, I can certainly buy your ending.
Yeah,
that's a cool ending. But the ending that I walked away from this movie, the only one that I can think of is it's not crooked cops going after crooked cops. These guys are appointed by the mayor of this town.
Still, it's something that could have still been thought up in his head.
But then why the location change?
What location change?
It switches from he's in the hotel. He's on his way to Colorado from. What, Minnesota?
Montana.
He's going to Montana from Minnesota.
He's in Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
That was something like one of the northern states. So he's going to Montana from Wisconsin. Like, there's...
Well, he says he vacationed there once.
And his wife is from there.
Yeah.
So...
No, his wife was from California or something.
Yeah, his wife is from
They vacationed in Montana.
Yeah.
See, it's been a while since I've seen this movie. I'm trying to remember all the details. But... I don't know, I
took every, it as... You know, Hermano does have a point, because every clue that comes up is either brought up or thought up by Totoro earlier in the movie, at some point throughout the movie. And, I don't know, Hermano's convinced me.
I don't know, I was so interested, because at first I was like, well, it's this way, but then the stuff that happens at the end, I'm like, well, you don't really see him shot. I mean, he looks like he's laying on his side and stuff, but he's not. He's just in like a hospital gown. Like he's not like
he doesn't know bandages.
There's no bandages. He's not like, you know, somebody that got shot. Like
maybe there'd be an intravenous line or something. You know,
yeah, like something. There's no IV even hooked up to him. Nothing. Like he's just laying in a bed. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm just like, this doesn't seem right. And the cops are all just like, this guy's obviously not right in the head. Like, where? What are you talking about? There's no blood. There's nothing.
So then, what about the cop that took his story earlier that passed this information on to these other guys?
I think all that's in his head. It's all made up.
It's the same cop that drops him off.
Once again, still up in his head.
Yeah.
Hmm. I can give that credence.
He notices that guy in the diner when he moves in. He could have fabricated that entire meeting with them where he sits down in his same booth and takes down his information and stuff like that. Like, I think he's trying to move on, and it's just somebody realizing they're going insane with the, you know, just this. Without having any answers and just fabricating a story in order to move on.
It's possible.
To me, that seems like a better movie. If it's more in the literal sense that everything actually happened, I think it's a lesser movie in my eyes, at least.
Well, the thing as I took away is that sometimes you don't always get what you want.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he wants revenge, he wants closure, and now you don't always get it.
That's the theme from the beginning of the movie. Everybody, like Romano said, everybody is telling him to move on, and he doesn't want to move on, and maybe this is his coping mechanism to finally get over this. Actually, you know, it's funny. There's another movie I saw recently that kind of reminds me of this. But anyways, it's his... mind telling him this is how you have to move on and be able to you know, just get on with your life.
Because otherwise he's not getting any help. Like, there's no answers. Like, these videos aren't any kind of clue that he can follow. That nothing's, you know, visible to him. There's nothing he can go on. There's nothing that really the cops can go on. It just seems very random.
I thought it would have been really funny if he looked across the street at the crossroads and saw Tom Hanks from Castaway at that point.
Or he walks across the street and all of a sudden, you know, the car from Drive just zips by.
That's funny. Anything else you guys want to mention before we get into spoilers?
No, we apparently got two different endings.
I mean, before we get
two different interpretations of the ending.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
I mean, as far as recommending this movie to anybody, I can't really see anybody.
They would have to be like us, where
they'd
have to
like completists, you know?
Yeah, completists want to check out some... your favorite director's
movie. It's not exactly the most accessible.
No. Not many of his movies are.
It's a good performance. I think John Turturro was great in it. I mean, he definitely was the best part about the movie. And the way he played the character is, you know, obviously very much like most of... Now we've come accustomed to know Nicholas Winding Refn characters where they're not very vocal. They're just kind of, you know, just visually they just look like, you know, like he just looked like someone that was kind of broken and just really soft-spoken and stuff like that. Didn't really say much.
Did you go throughout this movie thinking, I wonder what Ryan Gosling would have been like in this?
No.
No?
I could honestly see this being remade. Maybe...
Fear Extreme!
That's the other thing. What the hell is Fear X? Like, know, the title of this movie just really stinks of like late 90s crap.
That's why title
movies. Straight to DVD.
X just sounds like a bad horror movie or something. But this, it's really... Like, the title of this movie is probably the worst thing about it. Like, it really has nothing to do with the movie.
Hmm. Yeah. You're right. It's a really bad title. Something else.
Like if someone didn't tell you, like if we just told you, like, hey, I watched this movie. It's called Fear X. I guarantee they'd think it was like some sci-fi movie, the channel Sci-Fi, or like, you know, like some bad horror movie from the 80s or something. You know what I mean? It just sounds really terrible, like the title.
Yeah. It'd be interesting. Yeah, maybe a remake. We always talk about we don't like remakes, you know, but I can see somebody doing an effective job with this.
Yeah, like definitely would have to be like a low budget. I mean, it's a very small movie, you know what I mean? There's not, you know, any explosions. There's one gunshot in the entire movie.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I like the story. The only thing I didn't like was those little interstitials with the weird physical representation of his, you know, going insane or whatever. I don't know. I just thought those, like, seemed really cheap in an otherwise fairly good movie.
Fair enough. Grades. I'd go with a B.
B minus.
B plus.
That's a B average. Easy enough. Okay, that does it for this episode of the First Time Watchers podcast. You can find us on Facebook by searching First Time Watchers. We post movie news and updates that we think you would be interested in. And you can email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com.
You can talk to us on Twitter at 1sttimewatchers@twitter.com.
Or follow us on our Tumblr page, firsttimewatchers.tumblr.com.
Please download our episodes on iTunes and feel free to leave a review. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. If you have any suggestions of movies for us to watch, please send a tweet, an email, or post on our Facebook page. And stay tuned for our next episode. We will be discussing Chan-Wook Park's latest, Stoker.
That's the First Time Watchers podcast because we like to watch.
Holy shit, 43 minutes.